Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This is Mraz. Today's show was unlimited with great moments, laughs, and good takes. Here is the best of today's show.
We're going to turn the page back 15 years to Mraz's senior year at West Babylon High School on Long Island, New York. It was this year where Mraz fancied himself as a bright, shining star in the upcoming sports media world. He had written for the school newspaper. He had had charismatic 4 years at West Babylon High, winning all types of friends and admirers with a quick joke here, a funny quip there, and overall just being a guy amongst campus, big man on campus, both literally and figuratively. And at this time, there were senior superlatives, you know, best dressed, best looking, most likely to be famous, all this type of stuff. And there happened to be one category at West Babylon High that you probably did not have. Maybe this was some type of foreshadowing of Mraz's career. They had one senior superlative that I know I didn't have in my high school, and I don't know any high school that's ever had it. Most likely to host a talk show. Now, Mraz, of course, in 2005, you might imagine, of course, in his mind, destined for celebrity and greatness at that point in time. So it was no surprise when the West Babylon High School yearbook staff had collected the votes and he was in the top two. Well, the way that they decided things back in this era, those salad years, this halcyon era of yore at West Babylon High, was they would take the two highest vote getters. The tabs were open for everybody. The votes were open for everybody. Mraz was one of the top two alongside a colleague by the name of Justin Stroker. Well, now that they were in the top two, there was one final vote. Everybody had the top two, and then they would vote again. And much like the 69 Mets, much like one of the greatest Cinderella stories ever, Justin Stroker upset Mraz in one of the most amazing ballots ever. You thought there were historical ramifications on November the 3rd this year. It was nothing compared to the senior superlatives of 2005 West Babylon High. Justin Stroker had pulled out a miraculous win, shocking the Mraz family. It sent Sean into a deep depression, a nosedive that he's never quite recovered from. He views Justin Stroker as his lifelong rival. And so a little bit like Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, finding motivation everywhere. Everybody had wronged him. It's what Mraz looks at every single day, which is why he is a career built on accuracy, built on work ethic, built on a never let up attitude. It is why he is just incredibly focused on the goal at hand, is because Justin Stroker 15 years ago took his senior superlative. Well, today, 1 hour and 13 minutes from now, Justin Stroker is going to join us here on the show. And we've had Joe Montana, Barry Sanders, some of the heroes of mine growing up, Jerry Rice. We've had Tim Tebow join us on the show. We've had Patrick Mahomes join us on the show. We've had some of the greatest athletes ever join us here on this show. We had Ken Griffey Jr. join us on this show. I don't think I've ever been more nervous and excited for an interview than I am to know that Justin Stroker is going to join us. So please mark it down, everybody. October the 13th, 2020, the DA show hit its apex.
Hennessy.
Let's start with the Monday night football game last night, Saints and Chargers, and the Saints end up with an overtime victory, much needed. I think the Chargers season is kind of going nowhere in terms of a postseason run, but for the Saints, who came into the year with designs on a Super Bowl run, 2-2 last night, they were given everything they could handle by the Chargers. Chargers had jumped out to a 17-point lead, 20-3. It took the Saints with a big second-half comeback and then a doink field goal attempt at the end of regulation by the Chargers, and then an overtime win as the Saints go down the field, get a field goal, and then will stop the Chargers on a fourth down. So the Saints get out of Dodge with a victory. They move to 3-2 on the season. I thought last night for the Saints, some good, some bad. Early on, Drew Brees once again looking very pedestrian. By the second half, things had opened up. The offense had opened up, hit a few big plays. The Alvin Kamara juggling catch is a beauty. When he hits Jared Cooks as well in the touchdowns, a really good throw and read by Drew Brees. He's not over yet. Putting a fork in Drew Brees is so silly. It's so stupid. The guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, he's going to end up retiring with most passing records. Is he Drew Brees of 2009? No. But he's still damn good. And if you give him 60 minutes of football, by and large, we're getting ultimately good Drew Brees performances more than bad Drew Brees performances. There's also the Taysom Hill RPO play that he gets into the end zone. You could only imagine if Sean Payton is completely enamored with Taysom Hill with like three plays a game and most of them for negative yardage. If he actually is going to score a touchdown, forget it. I'm pretty sure Sean Payton's waking up this morning wondering, okay, how do I get Taysom Hill 30 carries a game? So the Saints get the victory. That's an important one for them to remain above 500. I thought, though, the story of the game was Justin Herbert. I did. I thought the story of the game is Justin Herbert because for the Saints, it's an up-and-down effort. And ultimately, they get the W, so you can't say, well, now they're really struggling. The urgency's really on. How many more losses can they afford? They stay in a relatively comfortable spot at 3-2. It's not totally comfortable. It would they'd rather be 5-0 or 4-1. But ultimately, they end up coming out with the W. I thought, though, that the big takeaway last night was that Herbert, building up that 20-3 lead. And in the second half, certainly the Saints defense adjusted. But Herbert had some remarkably good throws. And on a national stage, on a Monday night, granted, no fans in attendance, so it's not like you're going to this loud din of a Superdome. But he had some throws that were just really beautiful. And on that final drive where he is trying to get down the field for a game-winning touchdown at the end of regulation, his throw to Mike Williams is gorgeous. Now, Mike Williams makes an incredible catch in traffic. But there's the read. There's the player. You've got to put it on a dot where he can get it and he can get it only. And Williams hauls it in. And it's a tremendous throw and an even better catch. And combine this with a number of deep throws in the game that led to touchdowns or big chunk yards. And one thing that I loved from Justin Herbert that I saw was a willingness to take shots downfield that so rarely young quarterbacks have. What's Justin Herbert's greatest quality? Let's start there. It's where we begin. Your cold open.
In the shotgun. Boy, they're crowding that defensive line. Here they come. Back to pass. He throws a line drive pass. Leaping two and catch by Williams right at midfield on the Florida way. At midfield, he's close to the first down. I don't know that he's got it. Let's see where they spot the ball. The Saints have emptied their bench. They think they have stopped him. And they have. They put it down short. Fourth and seven pass. Brilliant catch by Williams, but short by the length of a football.
It's going to take more than what we're doing right now. It's going to take 30 minutes more of stretching, watching film, weightlifting, little bits that add up in the long run. And I know we're really close. And I know that if we keep working hard and doing the right things, good things will happen. And I love the way this team battles. And I know we're going to stick together. And losing's tough. It always is. But we're going to learn from it. And I know that we're going to stick together through this.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That was, of course, Justin Herbert after the game. That was Kevin Harlan on your call on Westwood One. Herbert played well enough to win there, especially by virtue of his numbers. He throws for 264 last night, four touchdowns, no interceptions. And absolutely spread the football around. That incredible throw and catch by Mike Williams. But Keenan Allen had a couple of big throws and catches there as well. Hunter Henry had a couple as well. I mean, I think it was something like nine different Chargers caught passes last night from Herbert. What I was just saying there to me is his greatest quality. When you watch young quarterbacks, when you watch rookie quarterbacks, especially in their first month and a half of starting, you will see so many guys that are so scared to make a mistake because these days in the NFL, coaches beat out of you turning the football over. Every single coach has the same exact spiel to his team. We can't turn the football over. If we turn the football over, we're going to lose. We can't give away possessions, yada, yada, yada. So young quarterbacks get this early. Their position coaches, their coordinators, their head coaches are beating their brains in about turning the football over. And so ultimately, young quarterbacks, where the game is moving a little bit too fast, obviously, will just end up taking underneath stuff all day long. Check down to the running back, something underneath, the quick read, and just get it out. Because you're not then surveying the field, letting things break open, seeing what evolves. You just need to know your read and go there immediately. And oftentimes, the play might be for downfield, but you will immediately go to your check down because you just can't wait for that guy to get open 20 yards downfield because the pass rush is coming after you and you just get skittish. The thing that I love about Justin Herbert, his eyes are downfield first. He's looking for big plays. He doesn't want to check down Charlie. He does not want to do that. And for a young quarterback who is four starts into his career, it's really great to watch. I think the Chargers got a really good player here, a really good quarterback. And I didn't know how he would look this early in his career. I mean, his career at Oregon was up and down at best, and there were some question marks about how much fire, how much composure, how much leadership he was going to show, whether he was worthy of being a top 10 pick in the NFL. His physical attributes were great, but you know, he grew up in Eugene and went to school down the street and didn't become the starter until later in his career, and people kind of wonder, well, is he really a true alpha male, or is he a homebody? And I think everything you've seen from Herbert in his first month of starting is really encouraging. I mean, I think when you hear him speak, he feels like he's got a good head on his shoulders, feels like he's confident. It feels like the locker room respects him, the huddle respects him. And again, from a football standpoint, I know the second half ended up being less effective than the first half. But, I mean, look, a rookie quarterback going to New Orleans and playing a good defense like that on the road – and throwing four interceptions and no touchdowns and deserving to walk out of there with a win considering he set up his field goal kicker at the end of the game for a 50-yarder that went off the upright. You know, I have a lot of respect for him, and I think he's going to be a really good one. And I think, to me, the greatest quality is he's not right now nervous and skittish and not want to make a mistake. He's already looking for big plays. He's got aggression. He's got an attitude where he wants to go after the defense because he's confident in his guys and he's confident in himself. But he's doing it without throwing a bunch of interceptions and throwing them out of the game. And his arm is tantalizing. Fun game last night. Come back by the Saints. They get the W, 30-27. Saints move to 3-2. Chargers fall to 1-4.
So, what's eating you?
People that get in the left lane and drive the speed limit.
I gotta trash the NFL, man.
Trash my ex-girlfriend.
You want me to trash that?
Trash Tuesday, my favorite day of the week, not for nothing.
Time to vent. We take it out like the trash. It's Trash Tuesday.
Mraz, lead us off. Who are you trashing?
DA, I am trashing the pre-COVID awkwardness on when to leave a wake when somebody passes away. You see, last night, unfortunately, I had a family friend's grandparent pass away, and I went to the wake, and the way the funeral homes are operating right now, they give you kind of a card counter because there's only a certain number of people allowed in at a time. What I realized when I left was because they kind of hurry you up if you're not immediate family, is this is the way it should always be. Everybody knows when you go to these wakes, it's very sad, depressing. You pay your respects to the friend you're going for. You go to the body. And then you kind of just meander and sit around for no reason for a half an hour. And you never know when the right time to leave is. And either way, it's awkward and uncomfortable. Last night, the way this is working now, it's in and out, in and out, in and out. I was in and out of there at 7 minutes, took away all of the awkwardness. If anything remains the same from this COVID pandemic, I hope it's the non-awkwardness on when to leave a wake. Let's shuffle everybody in and out of there.
Trash the pre-COVID wake regulations.
I smell rotten eggs.
Or expectations. Yeah, you're expected to linger when you had the wake before, and now there's no lingering. I'm with you. I like that. I haven't done that in post-COVID world, but I think you're right. The lingering's very awkward. AB, who are you trashing?
DA, I'm trashing me and my Sunday night sleeping habits. This is not the Sunday scaries. I get to bed just fine tonight, but then I keep for three straight now Monday mornings. I have woken up wide awake around 1:30 or 2 a.m., can't go back to sleep, rolling around, tossing and turning, costing myself 2+ hours of sleep. And bad sleep starting the week is the worst time for bad sleep because there's no catch up. So I'm trashing me for having bad sleep, setting the tone for bad weeks on Monday mornings.
Trash them.
This must be garbage time.
Yeah, look, with this schedule, you get in a hamster wheel. If you don't set the tone going into the week, you'll play a devastating game of catch-up every single day. And for you, with two kids, and in this situation, I mean, you're behind the eight ball early, folks. You ain't digging out of this until Saturday afternoon.
Can't happen.
Pete the Body Bilotti, who are you trashing?
I am trashing umbrella makers. I mean, we have had umbrellas for however long it's been, and we still haven't found the umbrella that conquers the wind. Every time, every day, the last few days, I had this great umbrella that I spent a lot of money on. Poof, goes away because of the wind. And the wind is destroying umbrellas, and we haven't figured it out. We figured out all these new phones and all this new technology. How about we get an umbrella that conquers the wind and that we can go outside during a storm and actually be protected? Get them out.
Splash Brothers, more like the Trash Brothers.
Thank you.
I've had some version of my trash before, but I just want to restate this. I'm watching TV. I think I'm watching the Monday night game, actually, last night. And one of the commercials for one of these drugs comes on, one of these pharmaceutical drugs. And it's a bunch of people in a Corvette or some type of convertible driving down the highway, breeze in their face. They're laughing and they are just having the best damn time ever. And you're like, wow, that looks awesome. What is that? I want that experience. It's like sun-kissed day in California. You're just head is out the window. Then they're at like this lake and they jump off the dock holding hands. And you're like, wow, they look like they're having the best time ever. And I'm like, I don't even know what this drug is for, but I'm just like, I wonder what they're not being specific about what it helps, what it's for, what the symptoms are. And I'm like, this looks like such a happy time in these people's lives. I'd like to know more about this drug. I don't even know. I'm curious. What is this for? So I go online to look at it. And the first question on the website is, the drug may cause serious side effects, including infections. It may lower your immune system to fight infections. It may increase your risk of infections. Now, lowering your immunity right now is probably a bad idea. And I'm like, is this slightly irresponsible to have a 30-second commercial where these people are having the best day of their lives? And then if you actually take this drug, you are at risk higher of an infection right now, and it lowers your immunity? That feels like a really bad thing. So I was just reading a little bit more. You know, here's some possible side effects: fever, sweats, chills, weight loss, cough, blood in your mucus. I'm like, now, wait a second. I didn't see any of this from the people jumping into the lake. I didn't see any of this when it came to this convertible. It looked like a great day in the sun.
That was before.
And so I am trashing pharmaceutical commercials that are so incredibly irresponsible because this is always par for the course for them. Trash them, PDB.
Warm, sizzling garbage.
15 years ago, our next guest was voted by West Babylon High School on Long Island as most likely to host a talk show. Who came in second? Who did he defeat? Our very own Mraz. Well, joining us this morning on the show to go back in time, it's a little bit like a forgotten classics segment, if you will, a throwback, if you will. We have Justin Stroker. Justin, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, DA. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
My pleasure. Well, that's good energy coming out of the box. It feels like you probably were built for this. You were built to be a personality on the radio. So how important was that senior superlative when you won it 15 years ago?
I wish I could take that bait, but honestly, I'd forgotten about it until Mraz had reached out to me last week.
Huh. So it meant nothing to you.
Yeah, it really meant nothing to me. So Mraz, I'm sorry to hear that it got under your skin so much.
Well, for 15 years, he's been thinking about this, and he can't believe he didn't win the vote. Do you remember how the vote happened?
It's so distant in the past. I was part of the, I guess it's the AV club, and we used to do the advisory announcements in the morning. And so I think people just kind of latched onto that. It was just something I was doing for fun, not anything I was doing really as a resume builder.
So you're just kind of having some fun, doing some morning announcements, and it just so happens people really liked you and respected you enough to vote you in as the most likely to host a talk show.
I don't know if it was a respect thing, but they definitely, I guess, just associated me with the talk show and went with that.
Mraz has told us that the way the voting went down, because I asked him, how would you ever know you came in second, was that everybody was eligible to be voted on and that they took the two finalists and then there was like a runoff. He could be totally lying because that is not listed in the yearbook. We have pictures of the senior superlatives and nowhere is his name around your name. Is that how it happened from your memory or is he making that part up?
They didn't officially announce it, but they did give like the top three performers in the category, unofficially to the class before printing it into the yearbook.
Okay, so there was only one vote. It wasn't a runoff, as Mraz is insisting, like a championship round.
That's how I remember it. He might remember it differently.
Okay. Most likely to host a talk show, West Babylon High School 2005. Justin Stroker joins us this morning here on the show. What do you remember from Mraz in high school? Was he a charismatic fellow?
Charisma is a good word for it, I think. We ran in different circles. I didn't know really much about him. We played a couple of pickup football games on the holidays together. Other than that, I just remember he was a sports guy. He was always in some sort of jersey, like everyday jersey and sweats every single day.
Yeah.
And he was a nice enough guy. Wouldn't give me free sandwiches at Subway, but that's understandable.
Now, do you remember his male pattern baldness back then? He told us that he was nearly bald entirely by senior year of high school.
I didn't want to bring that up, but since you're asking, yeah, it was a definitive characteristic for him.
And he says that's why he was voted best hair. Do you remember that category?
I should have broke out the yearbook for this. I remember that category. I was actually upset I didn't win that one because I had some luxurious locks back then. But best hair would make sense for him, absolutely.
Tell us about your career path after high school. Clearly, you did not go into hosting a talk show. Mraz took a bit of a detour. He did 10 years of hard time at Subway and then jumped into his radio career. Meantime, seems like you've had a natural upward trajectory. Seems like you're doing very well. So what was your career path?
I was stalled for a little bit. I went to college after high school. I wound up working in bars and restaurants in the city. Managed a few of those. Came back home in 2010 and wound up going back to school for nursing. Got my degree in 2014, and I've just been working in nursing and working my way up the ladder since.
And Mraz tells us that you're doing very well in administration in the hospital system, right?
Yeah, relatively new to me, about a little under 2 years in, but working in the patient and customer experience domain, so pretty much just getting, you know, people just come to me with complaints, and I got to try and smooth them over. So I guess the talk show personality aspect of it really plays into effect there. But yeah, doing well for myself. Not to brag, but you know, I think I am.
That's great. Well, congratulations on that. And I would imagine that one of the surprise complaints that you got this week was, I can't believe you beat me in best, most likely to be a talk show host 15 years ago. That's kind of a unique complaint that that Mraz
that
had.
One was a big complaint. And again, Mraz, you know, I'm sorry that this has stuck under your skin so much. If I had known it was going to, I probably wouldn't have changed anything. But I'm glad I could fuel that fire for you, buddy, because you're doing a great job here.
Now, there's a couple of things I just want kind of fact-checking on. Number one, Mraz insists that he is the most famous West Babylon product right now, that even though Geraldo Rivera came from your town as well, he doesn't give back to the community as much as Mraz does. This is what he told us last week. Would you qualify Mraz as the most successful or most beloved West Babylon product?
To my knowledge, yeah.
Wow. Number two, how is he viewed now? A bit of a circus clown, a bit of a crazy person? Because I'm sure the Facebook rants and the social media meltdowns and him naked and in Central Park, I mean, all of this stuff, it must make its way back to your hometown, right?
It does, yeah. And I think it was a little unexpected of him. You know, knowing him in high school and the way, you know, his mannerisms then, but he's really, I guess he's found his niche and is running with it. So I think it's a lot of respect for him, you know, cutting his teeth and getting to where he is now. And if this is the persona that's going to get you to the next level, then, you know, run with it.
So it almost sounds like you think it's a bit of a created persona. It's not actually naturally him. He's just kind of using this as a caricature.
It seems very caricature, you know, but I didn't know him too well personally. So, yeah, I think he's doing a great job with it. Obviously, you know, a portion of it's going to be natural. You have to have that sort of innate insanity to be able to run with it to the level he does.
Are you aware of a backyard bar named Bob's Bar? It was profiled in the New York Post recently.
I am not, no.
Oh, okay. That happens to be a bar at Mraz's dad's house. It's where Mraz grew up. His dad has a backyard bar, and it was profiled in the New York Post. Mraz insists that it's the most popular place in town, but apparently you've never heard of it.
Wow. I mean, Mraz, next big party, you're going to have to throw me the invite, buddy. Now I'm interested.
Also, have you ever heard of a person named Sean Farish or Sean Farish? Mraz insists that this guy has been trying to leverage Mraz's celebrity by being kind of an evil knockoff version of him.
Yeah, that's entirely true. You know, he's got a doppelganger running around town claiming to be him. But we all know who the true Mraz is, so we're not going to fall for it.
And let me also ask you about growing up in your neighborhood, in that town, Halloween's right around the turn of the decade, I guess, the 2000s, the millennium. Mraz says that in 8th and 9th grade, he was viciously beaten with a flower sock on Halloween, which scarred him for years upon years upon years for Halloween. Do you remember ever getting a flower sock hit on you, or do you remember doing that?
I hate to laugh at traumatic events, but no, it happened. It happened. The flower socks were real. I got hit one year with a frozen paintball right in the lip. And yeah, kids were cruel, man. The suburbs are not a nice place.
Do you remember the other co-winner of Most Likely to Host a Talk Show that's featured in the yearbook with you, and if she ended up going on to doing anything in the public eye?
I believe that was Nicole DeMezza. And she actually, I believe, is a physician's assistant right now.
Gotcha. So you guys might make a good co-host team. That would be a decent talk show, the two of you, in the medical industry.
I hadn't put it together, but I'll give it a shot and let you know what happens. Okay.
Justin, thanks for being such a good sport today, man. This was a lot of fun. Very funny stuff.
Had a great time. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. See you, buddy. Justin Stroker, the winner of 2005's West Babylon Most Likely to Host a Talk Show. And Bogues, I think we can see why. The guy's got some juice. The guy's good on the air.
I mean, that could not have gone any better. And you're right. I mean, from that very first sentence, from you welcoming him on, I would have voted for him. Take me back to 2005. He's got my vote if I'm in West Babylon. I mean, it's natural, his ability to be behind a microphone. And I'm glad he's doing something good for society, DA. But, I mean, think of the impact he could have had, possibly even stronger than that, behind a microphone.
He's already better than me at it still.
I mean,
the moment he answered that first question with that energy and that voice, I said, oh, my goodness. Like, had he interned the same time as me, climbed the ladder the same time as me, here's the difference. He'd be doing what I'm doing now. I would not be an administrator in a hospital. So I'm thankful he did
something
else. You'd
just be in a hospital.
Right, exactly. I'm thankful he did something else, but damn it, he's good.
He's really good. He had good pithy commentary. He got the bit. He's self-deprecating, but also knew how to needle you. He was good. He had a good energy.
And it's good to know all these years later, people remember me for wearing sports jerseys, sweatpants, and having no hair. That really, I guess I did leave a mark.
I mean, that's the headline to me. You were you 15 years ago. You have not changed, just like your location has changed, where you wear your jerseys and sweatpants. And you picked up a wife and kid along the way.
Picked them up.
But I mean, also remember that Mraz was living at home in that house for what, 8 to 10 years after graduation, and then living on the same block for another 3 or 4. So Mraz really did just stay 2005 version of Mraz until further notice.
I moved to a different town a year ago, guys. I'm a changed man now. Three whole exits on Sunrise Highway I moved.
So 2005 lasted 13 years.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah,
have been new ones for you.
Which is why Mraz remembers this vote so well. He is constantly flipping through that yearbook, stewing over the results of the 2005 senior superlatives.
And come on, he doesn't remember getting cut from JV basketball.
Right.
He doesn't remember until recently won it. That seemed like a little bit of a shot. You don't care at all.
He was like,
it's such a look on your face.
It's such a distant memory. I mean, I don't even remember. Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't matter at all.
Come on. Does it not matter?
Your heartbreak when he dismissed it. Completely. I don't even remember what it was like. Thanks for reminding me. The heartbreak on your face was amazing.
Meantime, Mraz is sitting in his basement, circling with a red marker that vote every single night.
Like the guy in Billy Madison who he's got to get apologized to.
Danielle's like, Sean, are you looking at the yearbook again? Are you drunk and looking at senior superlatives again?
Why do we need more red markers?
By the way, how about, you know, Justin kind of suggesting that Mraz is playing just a character here, AB, that it's not all authentic.
Well, I think he got to the right breakdown of that. It is authentic, and then Sean pushes things a little farther than he has to or you would normally go. But I think it's all legitimate. I don't think Sean ever is making up emotions. He might expand on them. He might push them farther than we'd expect. But I think they are actually his emotions and thoughts, and then they get a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of an extra push behind them, but they start in a real place.
Mraz's origin story is so fascinating that I almost feel as though we could benefit from regularly having on his former classmates and people that he grew up with, because it provides so much context, doesn't it? I mean, it gives you a more rich understanding of how he was built. And I said this before, I don't think there's a Mraz without West Babylon. It seems to me to have been a place that was the perfect petri dish or laboratory to create the weirdest people ever. I mean, I just, when we've gone through Mraz's classmates and family members and neighbors and the Sean Forash phenomenon, it just feels as though it's just an impossibly quirky place. I mean, would that be fair, Mraz?
I think there's a lot of sitcom-ish situations to that town and what's come of it, and there could be an episode every week. Absolutely. But look, you get what you get from what... That's it. I am the bacteria that's grown, and I am here on the DA show as a result of it. So embrace it, baby.
A little devastating that he had never heard of Bob's Bar.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's just more of a Daily News guy, not a Post guy. Could be.
But he was also in the industry. You'd really want somebody in the industry to know about Bob's
good
Bar.
Point. He could have John Taffert us, too, if he's been a manager before, said what we're missing, what's going on here. That's a good point.
Are these Mexican meatballs?
Wait, you put the chicken fajita in the meatballs?
That puts an onion, oh.
Shut it down.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. Frank Reich, any thoughts on benching Philip Rivers?
No. No consideration for that. Philip is our quarterback.
I mean, I think the key is, do you have a better option behind him? That's the problem. And I don't think Philip Rivers is great. I don't think you should have ever expected him to be great. But when you gave him that cash, what you are saying is we don't have a better option right now. And I don't think they necessarily do either. But Philip Rivers was rough against the Browns. Threw for zero touchdowns, two interceptions, a quarterback rating of 60, and he's looking every bit the part of aging quarterback that has one final mediocre year. And I think, you know, there's going to be a grab bag of some good moments, some bad moments. But think about it, Philip Rivers is the same class as Eli Manning, and Eli by the end was already getting very rough to watch and is already retired. What Roethlisberger is doing is really impressive and phenomenal. But, you know, to expect much more to me than what we're seeing from Philip Rivers was a little bit delusional. He's not old Philip Rivers, and I'm talking about 5 to 10 years ago Philip Rivers, but even that guy also throws you out of a lot of games and showed it last year. Who's the biggest Rays fan aside from Mraz? It would have to be Dickie V, as he took to Twitter to celebrate the Rays advancing to the ALCS on Friday night.
The Rays, baby, the Rays! Yes, sir! Yes, sir! Beat the Yankees! Take that $220 million payroll! Come on, baby! Let's go, Rays! Let's go, Rays! Let's go, Rays!
There's something perfectly Rays about Dick Vitale being excited about the Rays. Like, that would be their celebrity fan. The Lakers have Jack Nicholson. Right, the Knicks have like Chris Rock, and the Tampa Bay Rays have Dickie V at 85 years old. Going, oh, Taylor Glasnow, can you believe it? Type of dandies, Blake Snellkin, unbelievable. Oh.
Let's go Rays! Let's go Rays!
I can't now look at Dickie V ever again and not think about Mraz's avatar. It's Mraz in a Rays jersey and cap next to Dickie V at Tropicana Field. You guys, I think, you know what? Even as a gag, Mraz, you might end up becoming the second most famous Rays fan.
I guess I'll take it.
The other thing that I think that's so incredibly Rays is that there's, of course, a Stingray tank in center field. And that their first pitch was thrown out by Carly Rae Jepsen once. And it was even worse. She was the one that sang Call Me Maybe. It was even worse than 50 Cent. If you look at Carly Rae Jepsen's first pitch, it's so unbelievably bad. And it's like the most Rays thing ever. And finally, just another young wide receiver the Steelers develop in Chase Claypool. But is Steelers radio stealing a segment from our show?
And that is Claypool busting across the goal line for the touchdown right to left. There's the Matt Canada influence.
Oh, great googly moogly. That is pure Canadian bacon, Chalooch.
Yeah, the Canadian bacon.
He sizzles.
This is a snap. He throws it down the field. Oh, that is Chase Claypool into the end zone for a Pittsburgh Steelers touchdown. Wide open from 35 out, and Ben kind of knew it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've been saying it all day. This is our fourth time saying it, but that's top shelf Canadian bacon and sizzling.
He was looking at Chase Claypool the whole time. Ben it out there.
That is just excellent. You talk about Mapletron, four times Mapletron.
Four touchdowns.
That's amazing.
Chase Claypool had three passing or three receiving and one rushing touchdowns. He is from British Columbia. So, man, hearing the Steelers radio team yell about Canadian bacon really makes me feel like we got to bring back the NHL playoff bit. We talked yesterday about just how devastating that injury can be long-term for a guy that obviously uses his wheels, uses his mobility, uses his agility to be as effective as he is. Now, Stephen Jones, to his credit, said that Dak's injury does not affect their intent to re-sign him, to make him a franchise guy. But let's face it, the reality is the Cowboys just won a lot of leverage in that negotiation. Dak Prescott was trying to hold out reportedly for $40 million a year and didn't want to be locked into a full five-year deal, would prefer to have had a four-year deal. That way he could hit free agency again or be up back for another renegotiation for more cash later on at an earlier date. And now he's not going to get that. Now there's no way that the Cowboys would have to pay $40 million a year anywhere near that because he's damaged goods and he's a complete unknown. One of the things that you hear from the Cowboys locker room is that Dak is one of the hardest workers. He's got one of the best attitudes. He's never say die kind of guy, and the people just expect him to succeed. And so people just expect him to come back and be able to play well and rehabilitate fine from this. And thankfully, modern medicine is so much better than it once was. But I think it's a far cry to believe that Dak Prescott automatically gets to go back to being Dak Prescott. I sincerely hope he does. But what happens if it's not even just about the immediate, but it's about the long term? Now think about Peyton Manning. And Peyton Manning had a Hall of Fame career in Indianapolis and could have retired, and that would have been fine. He would have already been in the Hall of Fame. First ballot guy. But he ends up having the spinal surgery and coming back and having three glorious statistical seasons with the Broncos. But by the final year, he could barely throw a football. And remember, by the end of year three, it was getting kind of ugly as well. There was writing on the wall that Peyton Manning was coming to a harsh conclusion. Now, you think about it, Peyton Manning's only a year or two older than Tom Brady. But Brady's still playing. Peyton Manning can't. And it's not like Peyton Manning didn't take care of his body. He was meticulous with everything, with mechanics of his arm and not getting hit, etc. But he simply couldn't do it after that. And Dak, upon this injury, isn't a slam dunk Hall of Famer, but he is a very good quarterback. And he might come back from this and seem like he's right where he left off. But it's possible that the window of how long he can be healthy and mobile and active and agile might now be much shorter. Or he might come back and not be normal Dak Prescott. And so last night at halftime, you might have heard Adam Schefter reference 4 to 6 months is a recovery time. And that would put him back perhaps by June of next year and ready for the start of next year's training camp. Now, 4 to 6 months is not really June. It's more like April. So, I mean, 4 months is what, February? So I think that that's totally unrealistic. I think it's completely unrealistic when I hear stuff like that to think that Dak Prescott in 4 to 6 months is back out running around in that ankle and looking completely normal. But I would expect, just with the history of injuries like this and how he plays the position, and of course every injury is different, but I would expect him to be dicey coming back into next season. I would say that training camp of next year, assuming we have a normal training camp and a preseason, I would say it's dicey about him being ready. I mean, remember, he's injuring this mid-October. So is he ready in less than a year to come back and play at Dak Prescott level and that you feel comfortable putting out him out there on that ankle? To me, if I'm a Cowboys fan, this is two parts. Number one, I said this yesterday, I wouldn't be that terrified of the Andy Dalton era. I think in this division, Dalton is more than enough to win the division. I really do. I think he's more than enough. And I think he'll actually run the offense pretty well. And I think that the Cowboys will win this division. Now, it might be at 8-8, but I think the Cowboys end up making the postseason. I think Dalton is more than enough to win this garbage NFC East with as much talent as they have, and they can lean on Ezekiel Elliott more, and the defense just can't be ungodly bad. I think the second part is, I don't think you expect Dak Prescott to be your week one starter next year. I think it would be great, but I would expect Dak to come back in the middle of next season before they start him. I would think that's more realistic. And if you get week one Dak, that's a bonus, but I wouldn't hold my breath for that. Mraz, what do you think a realistic time frame is for Dak to come back?
Mid-October next year. I really do. I think by the time you open up all those camps and have him behind the eight ball, it's just such a devastating injury, especially for the kind of style of play he has where it's so reliant on his legs too. I mean, you could rush a Dak Prescott back, have him ready for the beginning of training camp, but is that really the Dak Prescott you want to see under center for the Dallas Cowboys? So I think, unfortunately, he's probably going to start the year on the pup list next year, be inactive very early on, and get him off and get him flowing in practices by late September, and then maybe you get him in there mid-October. To me, I think it's best-case scenario, and I think would be the smart play too, because again, it's a compound fracture injury that is on a quarterback that's so reliant on the run game.
Yeah, and when I see the low end being 4 months, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. There's no way that Dak Prescott's going to be ready to be quarterbacking in a football game in 4 months. Now, he wouldn't be asked that because they wouldn't still probably be playing unless there's a real crazy delay, or unless, I guess, what, the Cowboys made the Super Bowl or something like that. But I think it's far more realistic to think that sometime next season he comes back. So you're talking about a calendar year is what probably is more likely. Man, I know you clowned the signing of Andy Dalton in the offseason. But man, does that look so smart right now by the Cowboys? I mean, could you imagine how the backup some of these teams have? The awful journeyman, terrible, you know, disastrous backups that so many teams have if the Cowboys fell into that?
Look, I want this to be clear because you and I argued over this a lot over the summer. In fact, I believe there was a big Sunday show argument when we were doing those. And it was this: signing Andy Dalton and expecting that to be the leverage to tell Dak, hey, we don't need you when it comes to contract negotiations, I thought was atrociously a ridiculous take. But signing Andy Dalton with the acceptance that there's no doubt about it, he's not there to pressure Dak Prescott. He's there to be a backup quarterback. And if something happens, he's the perfect guy to step in. I think it was the perfect signing. And absolutely now you're having that, because what was going to be the alternative? They have Cooper Rush playing quarterback. I mean, what are they going to call Kyle Orton at 54 years old to come back? To have Andy Dalton now come in, I think kind of makes the Cowboys even an even more interesting story, because now he's paired with Mike McCarthy. He played well down the stretch, obviously, on Sunday. And as a guy who, with Marvin Lewis, always the butt of the jokes. All right, I'll get you to the playoffs. He, you know, his best moment is getting the Bills in the playoffs. He won't actually win a game. Well, now the story's there. Andy Dalton can rewrite his own story. And I think that's a pretty cool moment for him, because let's say he gets the Cowboys in the playoffs. Let's say the Cowboys win a playoff game or two, and Dak Prescott is ready to go on opening day. Well, now doesn't Andy Dalton become way more attractive than he was a year ago to a team looking now to fill the bridge with a quarterback, or maybe
oh,
they feel like they're in quarterback wonderland?
And I think it's going to happen. I tend to believe that in the universe, really good guys and good people, good women, good guys, I really believe they end up having good moments happen to them because they just have a little bit of pixie dust sprinkled on them. And say what you want about Andy Dalton in big games and not being able to win playoff games. That's all right. But he's been a great guy. He's been an unbelievably diplomatic, professional guy. And he's a Texas kid. He went to TCU. People clowned him. People make fun of his red hair. They make fun of his style of play. They make fun of the Bengal stuff. And now he has a chance at such a heartwarming story, and I think he's going to take advantage of it. I just think this has been placed in front of him in life that you could have never figured. Remember, people crushed Andy Dalton for signing in Dallas. Why are you signing in Dallas? You're never going to play in Dallas. You must just want a paycheck, yada, yada, yada. And now he's going to have a chance with a playoff team for, what, 11 weeks, 12 weeks to get this team into the postseason. And I think he's going to perform well with an offense that can get tailored to the ground game more. Then he's got a great series of weapons. Let's do an NFC East quarterback draft, okay? Let's take every quarterback in the NFC East, that starter and backup. And now we take Dak Prescott out of it because of the injury. Who would you draft number one overall in the NFC East quarterback draft for this season? We're not talking about to win one game. We're talking about from today until week 17. Try to get you into the playoffs. Who do you want? Who's the number one pick?
It might be Andy Dalton.
It might be?
It might be Andy Dalton.
So let's say it's Andy Dalton one. Maybe it's Wentz two. I mean, maybe it's Wentz one, but I think it's Dalton over Wentz. I think you'd go Wentz two, and then I think you'd go Daniel Jones three, although I don't know if you would. You might go Jalen Hurts three. I mean, I know we don't have any evidence on him, but let's even say it's Daniel Jones at three. Who's the fourth best quarterback in the division?
Alex Smith, and he's not even starting for his own team?
Maybe it's Alex Smith. Maybe it's Kyle Allen. But, I mean, Alex Smith threw for 36 yards on Sunday. We have kind of no idea what he is. Who's
Colt
the Giants'
McCoy?
Backup?
Colt McCoy.
I mean, think about the dregs of this division quarterback-wise.
They basically have the XFL. If you took that
exactly.
division and you took the eight quarterbacks now that Dak Prescott's out, you could probably have a pretty decent XFL.
Who was the Eagles' backup before they activated Jalen Hurts in week two?
Was it still Josh McCown? Because wasn't he like signed to be a backup, but he could live in New Orleans during the week and then come back up? Wasn't that contract?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's a member of the Eagles. I mean, again, 41-year-old Josh McCown. This is the totality of the quarterbacks in the NFC East. Andy Dalton, by virtue, I mean, the Cowboys had the two best quarterbacks in the division. Oy.
Good division. Really good division. A lot of wins.
And weren't you, by the way, yesterday trying to convince us that you're now a more positive and like a great teammate and you're just kind of trying to lift everybody up? And then I feel like you've delved right back into negativity last night on Twitter and then today during the show.
Well, hold on. I was not negative on the show. I even admitted after Justin Stroker's wonderful expose that I thought he was better than me, and I really gave him positive reviews. And last night, I was not negative on Twitter. Last night, I took issue with people putting Justin Herbert in Canton after one quarter of finally watching him on national TV, where if we've learned anything from Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, and Daniel Jones, it's let's relax and let's let things unfold for a whole season or two before we're crowning guys. That's all. I don't think it's being negative. I think it's being realistic.
But I have to ask, I mean, don't you feel like that's a little hypocritical? Haven't you been the king of overreaction?
Of course, DA, and as I've told you, I'm trying to grow here. So put it this way, if you have...
You're trying to grow by lecturing others about not doing what you do?
I don't want to do an apples to oranges here, but let's say you're an alcoholic and you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't you want to have the guy lecturing be a reformed alcoholic, right? Don't you want to learn from somebody who's made those mistakes? So when I lecture people on being overreactionary, it's because I'm trying to be the reformed overreactionary person. I've lived that life. I'm trying to live that cautionary tale. Because when you do that, then you end up with Dick Vitale on your Twitter. You got to learn to pump the brakes. So I, as somebody who's been overreactionary in the past, I'm teaching a lesson to others. Easy. Let's relax. Let's pump the brakes. That's all about my spinning it forward positivity stuff, which I think we'll have some kind of book written soon.
I just find this to be remarkably hypocritical from you, and especially considering you're going to act like this reformed guy 4 days after saying Giancarlo Stanton has earned his stripes for Old Timers Day, with 48 hours after that saying he's a bum, trade him, get him out. Like last night, you're trying to be a better Mraz, and you're lecturing people. Herbert has done nothing since the first quarter. You think the Canton slobbering 90 minutes ago is a bit much? Let me just go back to August of last year, and I want to play a clip for you. August of last year.
You know what?
Let's
how
play
many
this
times?
Clip.
2020, Daniel Jones is going to be an MVP candidate.
Oh, my God.
Why,
proof's in the pudding.
Why? Well, yes. So your proof is 2 preseason games.
You keep harping on like the preseason. That why are we playing them then if we can't judge a player? Why are we playing them?
We shouldn't be. That's the whole point why the NFL doesn't want preseason games anymore.
But time out. If Daniel Jones was out there and he was throwing picks left and right and his arm looked weak and he was thrown into the dirt, what would the story be? Boy, the Giants really made a mistake.
Well, it shouldn't have been. It should be.
Is it the opposite of that? Him looking unbelievably
the
awesome?
The games
like, wow, they
don't matter. It doesn't matter. But everything out there doesn't matter.
His performance does.
He had you 2 drives. It's 2 drives.
But it doesn't matter who he's going against.
There's plenty of
arm
guys.
Arm strength doesn't matter who's in the secondary.
There's plenty of quarterbacks with arm strength that stink. There's plenty of quarterbacks.
But they don't have the ball accuracy.
Yes. This happens every year. There's crappy quarterbacks every year in the preseason that look great. Every freaking year. Mraz, you've watched football for 25 years.
I have.
Every preseason this happens, there's quarterbacks that look good and they stink.
And there's quarterbacks that look great and they're great. And Daniel Jones looks like he's going to be great. He can move out of the pocket, move the huddle. The guy should be starting day one already. The Giants nailed this. They nailed it. Everybody killed him on draft day for taking Daniel Jones 6th overall. Duke stunk. He had a lot of incompletions. We don't know if he could throw the deep ball. And here we are. It's mid-August. We're heading towards opening day. And the Giants got the best player in the 2019 draft.
Wow. Now, that was a little over a year ago. Huh. And last night, Mraz is taking Twitter to the woodshed saying, Herbert has done nothing since the first quarter. You think the Canton slobbering 90 minutes ago is a bit much. Now, Justin Herbert, by the way, in his first 4 games, has looked way better than Daniel Jones ever has. He's actually played 4 NFL games and lit up the sky with bombs. Last night, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. Okay, last night, Justin Herbert, in the middle of a 4-touchdown, 0-INT, on-the-road game against an NFC Super Bowl favorite, throws 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and Mraz has the gall to lecture other people about overreacting to a quarterback when Daniel Jones, after two preseason drives, said, A, he's going to be an MVP candidate by 2020.
2020, Daniel Jones is going to be an MVP candidate.
I don't know if you've watched any of the 0-5 Giants, but I would probably say he's a little bit in the rear view right now of guys like Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers for the MVP race, but just slightly behind those guys this year. And number 2, that they got the best player in the 2019 NFL draft. This is a draft that had Kyler Murray and and Nick Bosa in the draft.
The Giants got the best player in the 2019 draft.
Well, DA, if I could just go back to week 7 of last year. Daniel Jones became the second rookie quarterback in NFL history to toss 4 touchdowns, have 0 interceptions, and throw for 300 more yards, something Herbert didn't do last night. The only other rookie to do that was Marcus Mariota in 2015. Now, you can look at Jones this year and look at how Mariota's career developed. To further my point, we overreact, and I overreacted to Daniel Jones. Now, he still may be really good, he still may be bad, but I am teaching that lesson. Don't be me. And that's
so you're considering saying that Daniel Jones will be an MVP candidate by his second season after two preseason drives might have been slightly an overreaction?
It was more than an overreaction, and you have been teaching me that lesson. I am
so
growing.
How dare you last night wag your finger at people that are watching Justin Herbert in real time and getting excited? You are the king of this. How dare you judge other people?
Exactly. I am the king of it, and I always end up with egg on my face, so why not point out where other people are making the same mistakes I made?
2020, Daniel Jones is going to be an MVP candidate.
Isn't that the point, to learn from mistakes? I am a cautionary tale, and people are taking the banana in the tailpipe last night. And I will give you one more thing. This is now the third time it's happened in 2 weeks. I am so sick and tired of something like this not appearing on the rundown, and you and Pete going behind my back to dig up audio of something I said, because everybody listening just now, just so you know, I had zero idea. It's not like Pete has one button
where he
can click and has that on. They went on a witch hunt for 3 hours before the show today to find that audio, and I've been blindsided again. I'm sick of being blindsided.
Didn't go on a witch hunt. This actually popped up because after Daniel Jones fell to 0-5, I had a listener send me that clip saying, remember when Mraz said this about Daniel Jones? This was a listener that sent it saying, remember this? And I'm like, wow. And I'm looking at that going like, that was so, I knew it was crazy when it was happening, which is why I was getting so mad at you then. But now watching it again, it's even crazier to think of you calling him an MVP candidate by this year. And so when last night, and I didn't bring it up, I didn't retweet it, right? I did not sandbag you this weekend with that. I was not going to use it as ammunition. Until last night, I see you lecturing people on Twitter. I'm like, this is so unfair. Number one, during the morning, Monday morning, you're like, I'm a kinder, gentler, supportive Mraz. I just want to support people. And then by the nighttime, you were daring to drag people for getting excited about Justin Herbert when a year ago, you said that he was the best pick in the NFL draft, a draft that has Kyler Murray in it.
Again, so let me just get this straight. If you make a mistake in life, you're not supposed to learn from a mistake and then
You know what might be a little bit better last night is if you say, hey, I know how good Justin Herbert looks and I really like him. But just so you know, everybody, I've made a huge mistake in the past as well. I thought Daniel Jones was going to be an MVP in year two, and look how that turned out. But no, instead of saying, I've made mistakes, and here's where I've made mistakes, you are just wagging your finger as though you never make the mistake.
Okay, so now the message is right. You're saying it's the wording that's wrong.
Well, or also admitting how hypocritical you are. Admitting, like, I know I do this all the time.
Admitted it.
Well, not on Twitter last night. You're just taking shots at everybody.
On Twitter to what? My 6,000 followers? We're at 200 markets right now, and I'm telling you, I am a doofus. I am an idiot. You might as well take 2 sticks of Genoa salami and slap me in the head back and forth like that every time I say somebody's an MVP after 2 games, somebody's going to be a Hall of Famer, somebody's great. I am a buffoon, a doofus that doesn't learn lessons, and now the moment I try to learn a lesson, I have my friends and colleagues sandbagging me with audio. So hello, if you're listening in Tulsa, if you're listening in Anchorage, Alaska, if you're listening in Boston, if you're listening on SiriusXM, if you're on Twitch right now, look at my fat face on Twitch. I am an idiot. I overreact and I make a lot of mistakes. And you love the show anyway. You hate me. You love me. And I am telling you now, if you think Justin Herbert is great after watching a Monday night game versus the Saints, learn from my mistakes and understand that you end up looking like a complete moron that nobody respects and nobody takes seriously, and even have 9-month-old kids questioning your integrity. So please, do yourself a favor and listen to me now. Don't listen to me or listen to me when I make a mistake and just stop it. Stop being me. I'm a bad idol.
Well, what happened to you telling others like Robin the 3-2-1 to, quote, sit a play out? Like last night.
I need to sit. You're right.
Like last night, people could have just enjoyed watching Justin Herbert throw four touchdowns and just been like, and you could have been like, haha, yeah, people are really enjoying it. I remember when I overreacted and just not criticize them.
DA, I have an illness upstairs, okay? We know this. And I acknowledge it every single day. My wife acknowledges it with me. I'm watching a game and I got to break out the phone. And as I'm typing it, the little voice goes, don't do it. Don't say it. You're going to annoy people. Then you're going to get into a fight after you annoy people. And then you click it anyway. It is an illness. I need somebody who's made Twitter mistakes to talk to me, but I'm at least talking to people about the overreactionary mistakes. I am, I'll put it this way, I'm both a sponsor and a problem here. So that's it. Look, I've made mistakes. I'm trying to learn them. I'm going to keep making mistakes. I'm not a finished product here, but I do want to, you know, keep the positivity. But just stop listening to me. Okay. Well, listen to the show, but, you know, understand everything I say is with a grain of salt.
Okay. Okay.
We got that?
All right. Do you still believe at some point Daniel Jones will be an MVP candidate?
I can't say that harshly, yes, but I think it's stupid to dismiss that he couldn't, if that makes sense.
Okay. Do you think that he'll end up being the best pick in the draft?
I think it's still possible, but I would say right now Nick Bosa probably would be.
Right
the
now,
Giants got the best player in the 2019 draft.
Right
again,
now,
that story's not over.
Right, but right now the Magic 8 Ball says seems unlikely.
Try again later. Yes. 2020, Daniel Jones is going to be an MVP candidate.
He's going to play his entire career and never be an MVP candidate, and we're going to keep playing that. It's going to just sound like an echo, like in 2026 and 2027 and
MVP 2020. MVP candidate. But, of course, today's audio will get lost in the shuffle where I admit it. I'm an idiot and don't listen to me.
Oh, no. I think we'll definitely be playing that quite a bit. Yeah.
MVP candidate.
That feels like...
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
We had the young man that beat Mraz out for senior superlatives in high school 15 years ago for most likely to host a talk show. Here's how it went. We have Justin Stroker. Justin, good morning. How you doing?
The home run Stroker.
Good morning, DA. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
You were built for this. You were built to be a personality on the radio. So how important was that senior superlative when you won it 15 years ago?
I wish I could take that bait, but honestly, I'd forgotten about it until Mraz had reached out to me last week.
Huh. So it meant nothing to you.
Yeah, it really meant nothing to me.
How do y'all like that?
I mean, it's so distant in the past. I was part of the, I guess it's the AV club. It was just something I was doing for fun, not anything I was doing really as a resume builder.
The home run Stroker.
Most likely to host a talk show, West Babylon High School 2005. Justin Stroker joins us this morning here on the show. What do you remember from Mraz in high school? Was he a charismatic fellow?
Charisma is a good word for it, I think. We ran in different circles. I didn't know really much about him. We played a couple of, pickup football games on the holidays together. Other than that, I just remember he was a sports guy. He was always in some sort of jersey, like everyday jersey and sweats every single day.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
And he was a nice enough guy. Wouldn't give me free sandwiches at Subway, but that's understandable.
Now, do you remember his male pattern baldness back then? He told us that he was nearly bald entirely by senior year of high school.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up, but since you're asking, yeah, it was a definitive characteristic for him.
The home run Stroker.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Also, we have your advanced analytics today. Were your high school senior superlatives shockingly accurate or way off the mark? 70% said way off the mark. Nearly one-third of those named most likely to succeed in high school regarded as a, quote, curse, according to a recent poll at memorylane.com. Imagine being named most likely to succeed and considering it a curse here, guys. Do you remember who won it for you there, Merez?
Yes, the one who went to Harvard who became a cashier at Stop and Shop.
Oh, yes. Dear. By the way, our toll-free line today was sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. Keep you up at night, switch to Geico, and save. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer of the DA Show. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. And thanks to Andrew Bogish, anchoring your headlines today. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership Disconnect.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.